mysteries of the unknown, UFOs, alien abductions, wonders of the world, ancient archaeology, ghosts, apparitions, secret military projects, futuristic science, government cover-ups, hoaxes and frauds. Join us as we embark on another edition of the Paranet Continuum. Now, answering questions and questioning answers, here's your host, the Director of Paranet Information Services, Michael Corbin.
And good evening and welcome to this edition of the Paranet Continuum, home of common sense, no-nonsense, paranormal talk radio. Well, tonight's going to be kind of a really interesting hodgepodge of different things. First up tonight, we're going to have Graham Hancock. We're going to talk about his new book, The Mars Mystery, The Secret Connection Between Earth and the Red Planet. And then coming up in the second hour tonight, the local hour here in the Denver area, we're going to talk about the MUFON Symposium that was held here. That was the 29th annual MUFON Symposium, International UFO Symposium, that was held at the Renaissance Denver Hotel over this weekend, and I attended it. What a conference. Very diverse, I want to say. A very diverse group of people. Very, very interesting conference, to say the least, and I, for the most part, thoroughly enjoyed it. But I have some interesting observations I want to kind of share with you tonight before we get to Graham Hancock and get to that. But, you know, last week we had, up for the first hour on the program, we had Tracy Torme. Now, a lot of you know Tracy is a screenwriter and a producer and did such noted films as Fire in the Sky about Travis Walton, the Travis Walton experience. And, of course, he did Intruders, the CBS miniseries, Intruders, based upon Bud Hopkins' work. And he's done things like, for right now, he's producing Sliders on the Sci-Fi Channel, I think it is. And Tracy's a wonderful guy. We got to, after 10 years of knowing this man over the telephone, and, you know, over the years we've had several botched opportunities to get together for lunch or dinner or whatever to meet each other, but we finally got to hook up this this weekend here in Denver. But the important thing is that he gave a talk today at 10 o'clock this morning. It was called Losing the War of Public Perception. And it was a very, very appropriate talk considering the conference and the kind of things that are going on at this conference. It was a very, very timely talk about, you know, kind of the way that we look at this thing and what's going on with it. But, you know, some of the people that were there today and yesterday and today, again, there was a very diverse group of people. I interviewed one woman in particular. Her name was Ann Druffel, and she is a author and UFO researcher from Pasadena, California. She's a veteran researcher. She got into the field in 1957 and has been involved with a lot of the big movers and shakers, the big names of the early days, like J. Allen Hynek and Jim and Coral Lorenzen. You know, and on, she was a member of NICAP and some of these other groups over the years. But she gave a talk about Dr. James E. McDonald, and McDonald was an atmospheric physicist from the University of Arizona at Tucson, and he was a very, very important person atmospheric physics, and McDonald was one of those kinds of guys that you kind of grow to admire, who had a lot of moxie, if you will, and somebody who was very outspoken. And, you know, a lot of you may not know this, but back in the early days, when Blue Book was the big thing, and that was the repository, the reporting center for UFOs and that type of thing, the early days was plagued with a lot of politics like it is today. And that's one of the ways that McDonald got his name out there, was because in the early days, Dr. Hynek, J. Allen Hynek, who ultimately became a public, very outspoken person against the Air Force's way of handling UFOs and that type of thing. But anyway, McDonald was one of those guys that went to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base and looked, got access to the Blue Book files and was able to look through them. and went all the way up to General Cruikshank at the base and was very verbal and vocal and condemnatory about how the Air Force was handling UFO cases. And he found that several cases were missing, particularly his own case, a case that he had filed, you know, a couple of years prior when him and a bunch of other scientists were out, I believe it was in New Mexico, and had observed a UFO. McDonald was strongly of the belief that there was something there, but he said it was one of the biggest scientific problems to ever face mankind. And he was a big advocate for getting a lot of scientific inquiry going on and did not feel that the Air Force was competent in being able to deal with that kind of stuff. And he stirred up a lot of trouble. And unfortunately, McDonald met an untimely death. He committed suicide and died in 1969. And yeah, allegedly committed suicide. That was the official report, of course. But he made a lot of people angry and that type of thing. But anyway, we were able to interview Ann Druffel, and she's a very interesting person. And you know, as you know from listening to me over the years, I'm one who's really into the history and a lot of the stuff that led up to what we perceive today. Druffel is a very valuable asset to the UFO community because, like I said, she's been around for many years and has seen a lot of things coming and going. And she is going to be publishing a book in August. I was told it was in August that it's coming out. And we're going to be in contact with her publicist. But I'm going to, next week probably, we're going to produce some of that interview and play it for you and let you hear some of it. Also at the conference, we were able to hook up with Stan McDaniel, who we also had on last week, talking about what is the case for the face. McDaniel showed some very, very interesting slides that were taken by the global surveyor, the one that's up there now, the most recent one that showed a lot of interesting things. And McDaniel is going to be continuing to do his research. I'll say one thing. I'm not sure. I know I said a couple of months ago, I talked to my own NASA source who told me that he saw the raw footage and was convinced that there was nothing there, that the face was over and done with. I have to say that I'm not going to, you know, I said I was pretty much convinced of that myself, but after looking at McDaniel's evidence, I'm kind of wondering. The door is back open, I should say. But I want to say something. This kind of goes into what Tracy Torme talked about today. You know, Richard Hoagland brought us the was the person that brought the public awareness to the anomaly on Mars. And, of course, we're hearing a lot from Richard Hoagland nowadays, and he talks a lot about this whole thing. But the thing is that when you look at something from Stan McDaniel, now Stan McDaniel distances himself from Richard Hoagland's work and, you know, has got a different angle on this. And I think it's, I'm not going to say for sure without really getting deep into it, that it's more scientific. But I think it is, just from what I've seen. And the thing is that, you know, one of the things that Tracy brought up to the group today was that when we get into this thing where you have a signal in all of this noise, you have to wonder that, you know, you hear people that are pro this or pro that, you have to wonder, you know, how much of this stuff they mix in to discredit the real noise. I mean, they surround something legitimate with a lot of bogus stuff. And they get everybody wrapped up in chasing down, you know, the smoke and the mirrors, while the real attention that needs to be given to something is taken away and in pursuit of the smoke and mirrors. And, you know, the thing is that, you know, where we're going with all of this and this whole thing is I think we're going to have to really take a step back and really take a look at what we call data, what we believe, and how we believe it, and really do the research and the hard work to find out whether or not something is worth pursuit and worth our time. Because we're finding there's a lot of stuff mixed in with all of this. And this is the thing that I came away from with this conference that was here this weekend. There was a lot of valuable stuff there. There was a lot of good people there. And then there were those who were just off the scale. And I kind of wondered, you know, why there was such a diverse group of people there. But anyway, we'll talk more about that as time goes. And of course, like I said, tonight, the second hour, we're going to have Jim Peters from the Colorado State Chapter of MUFON in the studio with us, and Jose Escamilla will join us as well to talk about his new video on rods. But coming up this hour, we've got Graham Hancock, so stay tuned for that. We'll be right back after this. I'm Michael Corbin, and you're listening to the Paranet Continuum.
Paranet has been on the information superhighway since before there was an internet. And during the last 11 years, we've collected an incredible amount of information on UFOs and the paranormal, and you can see all of it on our website. The address is www.paranet.org/paranet. See what Michael Corbin really looks like. Is he a modern-day Orson Welles? Or go to our news page and keep up with the latest happenings in ufology and the paranormal. Click on other interesting sites from our links page. File a UFO sighting report. Read about Continuum Magazine. See the Paranet Radio Studio. Download free pictures of UFOs. Join Paranet online using your Visa or MasterCard. You'll be authorized within minutes to see all 30 megabytes of files and pictures and nearly 200 real audio files of the Paranet Continuum radio shows dating back to April of 1994. You'll find it all at the Paranet website at www.paranet.org/paranet.
Who says you can't get something for nothing? The Paranet catalog contains detailed descriptions of all of the Paranet radio shows produced since April of 1994 and shows you how you can order them on audio cassette for as little as $5 each. Are you on the World Wide Web? You can join Paranet and get access to over 30 megabytes of text files and pictures, as well as real audio access to all of our past radio shows. Members also receive a subscription to Continuum, Paranet's quarterly magazine. The catalog shows you how to join. The Paranet catalog also has special book offers, t-shirts and sweatshirts with alien and outer space themes, and much more. And the catalog is yours free. Call now 1-800-UFO-NET-1. That's 1-800-836-6381 for your free copy of the Paranet catalog. That's 1-800-836-6381.
In touch with the latest news on the paranormal and the growing UFO phenomena by fax, computer network, and this program, the Paranet Continuum. Here's your host, Michael Corbin.
1-800-836-2009, 1-800-836-2009. Okay, now, my guest tonight is a person who's written several books now on the subject, on this topic of Mars, the pyramids, and that type of thing. He claims that Mars may be more closely linked to Earth than previously believed. From the time of the ancient Egyptian astronomers to the recent NASA explorations of the Martian surface, the red planet has been a source of awe and speculation for humanity. Ravaged by comets and asteroids, Mars is still a barren, bleak, and bitterly cold planet. But the question is, has this always been the case? The book we will be talking about tonight is The Mars Mystery, The Secret Connection Between Earth and the Red Planet, and it is my pleasure to welcome to the program tonight Graham Hancock. Good evening, Graham.
Hello, Michael. How are you?
Doing great, and yourself?
Not bad. Nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you, and thanks for being on the program tonight.
Pleasure.
What is this book about?
I think that Mars, the possibility of life on Mars, the question of what happened to Mars and what transformed it from a possibly wonderful planet into a hell world is one of the great mysteries of our time. I think this planet is an extraordinary challenge to our imagination and our willingness to open-mindedly test out ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed to me at this time that it would be worth writing a book about it and putting across my point of view and showing what I think matters and is worth looking at. So that's what I did.
Okay. Now, is this book a continuation of your previous writings with the mysteries of the Sphinx in Egypt?
Yes, of course it is, because what I'm really interested in is the mystery of what it is to be alive and the story about our past, which includes our connection to the cosmos.
Mm-hmm.
So it is absolutely in the tradition of my other books, but I'm exploring a different kind of mystery. One day I intend to write a book about human origins as well.
Okay.
I don't have to spend my whole life writing about the pyramids and the Sphinx.
Right.
But since they are amongst the greatest mysteries that we have here on Earth, it's been natural for me to pursue them thus far.
Okay, let's take it from the top then. We've got an asteroid. Is it believed or theorized, or is this actually proven scientific fact that we have an asteroid that transformed Mars from a planet lush with rivers and oceans into a bleak and barren icy hell?
It's not a proven scientific fact.
But this is what science speculates.
It's a theory which I'm putting forward in this book, and not an asteroid. The notion is of a giant comet. A great deal of work has been done on the issue of giant comets by a group of astronomers, mainly in Britain, Victor Kloub of Oxford University, for example, and Sir Fred Hoyle of Cambridge University, Bill Napier of the Royal Armagh Observatory,
mm-hmm.
And others, including Chandra Wickramasinghe at Cardiff, have all considered the extraordinary implications of giant comets, that our solar system is penetrated from time to time by a very large comet, perhaps as much as 200 to 300 miles in diameter. And they present evidence that such an object did enter our solar system and blow up somewhere about 20,000 years ago. And they trace its debris in the torrid meteor stream, which the Earth passes through twice a year.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm doing is I'm suggesting the possibility that that object, which they have presented a great deal of evidence for, may have exploded very close to Mars. But this idea could be completely wrong. It just is an avenue of inquiry that seems to me very interesting, and that opens a number of possibilities and connects to some known facts about cataclysms on Earth. But it isn't necessarily right. It's my take on this,
right.
and my attempt to look laterally at some of the evidence on Mars and at some of the things that appear to have been going on there, and try to make some kind of sense of them. One thing that is clear is that we have a planet which was once perhaps rather nice place to be. It certainly had oceans and rivers and lakes. The river systems appear to be very old. Some of the valleys and tributary systems suggest rivers that ran for hundreds of millions of years.
Mm-hmm.
There was rainfall and therefore a much denser atmosphere than there is today. So since we accept that water is one of the fundamental prerequisites of life, it has to be, if we're open-minded, possible that there may have been some kind of life on Mars. Then we have the so-called meteorites from Mars, a matter which is not settled yet, but a scientific controversy that we may be looking at traces of microorganisms from Mars in Martian meteorites that have landed on Earth, and we get quite a lot of Mars landing on Earth every year.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, there's the extraordinary, completely unresolved, massive issue of the monuments of Mars,
right.
Which NASA has successfully portrayed as a kind of lunatic fringe madness over the last 20 years, but which is in fact a vitally important issue that our society really rather urgently needs to resolve rationally and sensibly. And I think NASA has done a masterful job of public relations in persuading people that this is an embarrassing subject to talk about.
We were talking about this actually in the first segment because I heard Stan McDaniel speak at the MUFON conference here this over this weekend.
Sure.
And he showed some interesting photographs from the Global Surveyor, which kind of opens the door back up for whether or not NASA has been truthful about what's going on.
Just those photographs that opened the door. Anybody who thought that that image of the face that NASA released on the 5th or the 6th of April settled this issue and made it certain that we're just looking at some kind of funny geology on Mars. Anybody who could think that so easily has not really considered this subject in depth, in my view.
Right.
It's not an adequate response to a photograph taken from 220 miles up to say, oh, well, that's it then. That's the end of this whole huge mystery.
Mm-hmm.
The mystery's got so many dimensions to it, and the photographic evidence is so peculiar that I think the only rational thing to do, and it beats me why NASA isn't doing it, is to re-photograph that site 50 or 60 times from all kinds of different sun angles and inclinations and really have a close look at it.
Yeah.
And then settle this matter once for all. I mean, this is an eminently testable hypothesis. This is something which can be checked out. We don't need to wildly speculate endlessly about anything.
Okay.
You know, if NASA would actually do something about it, then there'd be no need for speculation.
Yeah. Okay, when we come back from our break, we'll get into the mystery of Cydonia, which is something that you will be talking about or is talking about in your book.
Sure.
The Mars Mystery. Graham Hancock is my guest. Stay tuned. Our number is 1-800-836-2009. Again, the number is 1-800-836-2009. We'll be right back after this.
Are you sick and tired of the same old UFO magazines? Paranet has the cure. Continuum. Paranet's quarterly magazine is packed with stories you're not used to seeing in the other magazines. There's a regular series on the need to establish a first contact science, written by a psychologist on the alien abduction phenomenon. You'll find interviews with Paranet's fascinating guests, late-breaking news from the worlds of science, ufology, and the paranormal, intriguing discussions from Paranet's news groups on the Internet, and their sighting reports, book reviews, and much more. A subscription to Continuum is only $18 for 4 quarterly issues. Call now to order Continuum at 1-800-UFO-NET-1. That's 1-800-836-6381. MasterCard and Visa accepted. Continuum, Paranet's cure for the UFO blues. Call 1-800-836-6381 and order Continuum today.
Paranet wants you to know. The Paranet Continuum has been on the air for more than 4 years, and we couldn't have done it without your support, so this is our way of saying thanks. If you've been listening for a while, you're familiar with our skeptical believer approach to this whole paranormal business. Yes, there are plenty of very strange things going on that science, government, and a variety of belief systems have trouble explaining, and we're not here to flatly debunk everything. We just don't buy into many of the more popular explanations for these phenomena, and we think some more critical thinking is needed. This makes us very unique in a world where the paranormal seems to be everywhere in the media, on TV, other talk shows, and big-budget movies. And some of the wildest explanations seem to get the most attention. Many people like our approach. Of course, others are mad at us. Oh well. With your continuing support of this radio show, our website, and Continuum magazine, we hope to keep everybody thinking and talking well into the future. Again, thanks. We are Paranet Information Services.
Whether it's online, fax, telephone, or radio, you're connected to Paranet, the world's most respected network of the paranormal. Now back to the Paranet Continuum and your host, Michael Corbin.
1-800-836-2009, 1-800-836-2009. My guest, Graham Hancock, he has just published another book called The Mars Mystery, The Secret Connection Between Earth and the Red Planet. And, Graham, let's kind of frame this mystery of Cydonia, okay? What about Cydonia makes it so mysterious?
Well, it's very simple. There's photographs of things that look like pyramids there, and an enormous face-like mesa staring up at outer space. And they're very powerful. They look extremely strange. They have an impact. Maybe they are just hills, you know. Maybe they are just weird geology, but there's something in them that says, you know, check me out. And that's really all I have to say on this issue, is that NASA has failed lamentably to check this issue out over the last 20 years. Because it's such an extraordinary issue. If it turns out that it is just weird geology, it's still worth checking it out. Because the stakes are so high if they are actually monuments.
What do you think happened to the Mars Observer a couple of years ago?
I don't know. For all I know, it could have just broken down. It seems to have been a bit of a bungled operation of handling the telemetry between Earth and the Mars Observer, as far as I know. But there's all kinds of rumors on this issue. I mean, spacecraft fail. A lot of spacecraft have failed around Mars over the last 20 years.
Why would NASA?
The only one.
Why would NASA want to hide, or basically steer us away from this?
I don't know. I don't really have any theory on that. I mean, most people cite the Brookings Institute report and the view that NASA apparently held in the 1950s that releasing information on intelligent extraterrestrial life would be destabilizing. But I can't believe that intelligent people in NASA seriously hold that view today. It seems extraordinary that they would, because it's obvious that the public is not going to be destabilized by such a discovery. So I can't think of any reason, and I don't know if NASA are hiding anything from us. All I know is that one of the great scientific questions of our time, which is an eminently testable hypothesis, are there or are there not artificial monuments on Mars?
So what right now what you would...
But seriously, by NASA, since the matter came out, NASA has instead concentrated a great deal of effort on making anybody who even asks the question look stupid.
So right now what you would basically charge them with is basically scientific negligence.
Yeah, extreme scientific negligence. With a subtle undertone of conspiracy here and there, just a faint whiff, which you can't be sure of. I mean, all of this could come from just plain stupidity, you know, and incredibly stubborn adherence to an additional point of view. I mean, look what the church used to do, who said that the Earth went around the sun, you know. They used to burn them. So, you know, NASA could just be absolutely rooted in a dogmatic ideology. But, you know, NASA could also be right. I mean, this could just be hills and tricks of light and shadow. But I just think it's really worth checking, and it's an incredible matter that it hasn't been checked thoroughly up to now. And three pictures taken in April this year are not enough to settle the matter. And on those three pictures are dozens of objects that are also very intriguing.
What is the question I would ask is, what is the fascination, the intrigue, the interest that we have had with the Red Planet all these years?
Well, it goes back a long way. Mars is prominent in ancient mythology and tends to be always associated with war and devastation and death. There's a curious sort of belligerent association with Mars that goes back a very long way. I think perhaps visually it does look rather, it is rather can be a rather red and prominent planet in the sky, and it has this odd retrograde motion through the heavens, which also makes it stand out.
Is there some connection between Mars and Egypt?
I don't know. It boils down to this: if the pyramids on Mars are artificial, which we don't know yet, but could get a lot closer to solving if NASA would just take more pictures of Cydonia. But if they are artificial, and it seems to me that's the first question to get out of the way before wildly speculating on anything else, but if they are artificial, then how likely is it to be a coincidence that there's pyramids on the Earth as well, at a place with a Sphinx called Mars on it? because that's what the name of the Sphinx means in the ancient Egyptian language. Harakhti, Horus of the Horizon, was the name the ancient Egyptians gave to Mars.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I don't know. It seems to me that it's a curious matter which deserves some thought. That's as far as I would want to take it.
Now, in part three of your book, you title it Hidden Things, and then some of the subtitles under that are Disinformation, Camera Obscura, Cities of the Gods. Can you go into some of that for us?
Just the feeling that there are issues about this matter of Mars which may not have been made clear to us, and that even if you go back into the ancient Egyptian texts and look at references to this place, and particularly I feel that what is being hidden here, if anything is being hidden, is the cataclysmic history of the Earth, and the story that remains to be told of the very real danger that we face from comets and asteroids. I think that ancient civilizations, and this is a point that I go into in the last chapter of that section, had a very strong feeling about comets as being objects of great danger, and that they understood that these were cyclical things which come back and cause repeated destructions on the Earth. And I think that an attempt may have been made to pass down information to us about that. I think NASA may be more aware of this danger than it is made out up till now.
Well, I know that there's a lot of discussion in Congress about how to deal with near-Earth objects and things like this.
Just in the last week, NASA has announced a massive increase in budget, if the newspapers that I've read along the way are to be trusted, a vast increase in its budget on surveys for potentially hazardous asteroids and presumably comets as well. NASA has been spending somewhere in the region of $1 million a year on this matter, which is a pitifully tiny amount given the nature of the danger, but apparently is going to increase this to $100 million over the next 10 years.
What do you feel, based upon your research and what you found? You're obviously convinced that something of this nature has occurred before, and of course, I don't think there's any...
Hit by comets and asteroids.
Yes, and I don't think that's irrefutable, because I think it's scientifically proven that we've been hit by these things.
Quite clear. You see, what happened was that for quite a while in science, it was considered disreputable to speak about cosmic cataclysms. And this was a very strong uniformitarian theory which dominated science for a long while, and it led to the total gutting of Immanuel Velikovsky in the 50s when he proposed catastrophes.
But do you think that was out of fear?
Well, no, I think that deeply rooted theories take the form of a religion after a while, and that people get very, very hooked on them and find it very difficult to accept. But it's also, by the way, a very effective way of testing out a new idea, is that you subject it to the fire of skepticism and orthodox reaction.
Mm-hmm.
And really, only if the new idea survives that fire, is it probably worth looking at anyway.
Okay.
And this has certainly been the case with catastrophism, which was quite despised in the 1950s, but gradually, despite the mockery, the evidence has accumulated that cataclysms involving comets and asteroids in particular have played a huge role in the history of the Earth. It isn't just the extinction of the dinosaurs.
Okay.
It's a whole much bigger story than that.
Okay. Stop there. We'll come back to that in just a moment, okay?
Yeah.
My guest is Graham Hancock. We're talking about his book, The Mars Mystery, The Secret Connection Between Earth and the Red Planet. Stay tuned. I'm Michael Corbin, and this is the Paranet Continuum.
Paranet has been on the information superhighway since before there was an internet. And during the last 11 years, we've collected an incredible amount of information on UFOs and the paranormal, and you can see all of it on our website. The address is www.paranet.org/paranet.
See what Michael Corbin really looks like. Is he a modern-day Orson Welles? Or go to our news page and keep up with the latest happenings in ufology and the paranormal. Click on other interesting sites from our links page. File a UFO sighting report. Read about Continuum magazine. See the Paranet radio studio. Download free pictures of UFOs. Join Paranet online using your Visa or MasterCard. You'll be authorized within minutes to see all 30 megabytes of files and pictures and nearly 200 real audio files of the Paranet Continuum radio shows dating back to April of 1994. You'll find it all at the Paranet website at www.paranet.org/paranet.
Pilots depend on accurate, timely information, both in the cockpit and on the ground. Skyway Publications helps with both. The Skyway Airport Directory and Entertainment Guide provides convenient, accurate information for safe flight and landing operations, as well as local businesses that cater to pilots. These are free pocket-sized guides with information on large and small airports nationwide, along with technical information, fuel and airport services, and businesses that can make life easier for pilots. Keep in mind, it's free. Check your local airport for the Skyway Publications Airport Directory and Entertainment Guide, or call area 970-669-1800. Call Skyway today and find out how the guide can also be a financial opportunity for you. Skyway Publications, your ticket to safer, cheaper, and more convenient flight. Check your local airport or call Skyway at 970-669-1800.
Some of the things you'll hear on this program are simply unbelievable. But what if they're for real? Keep an open mind and stay tuned to the Paranet Continuum with your host, Michael Corbin.
1-800-836-2009, 1-800-836-2009. Joining me is Graham Hancock, author of The Mars Mystery. The secret connection between Earth and the Red Planet. We're talking about cataclysms and catastrophes. Graham, I'm curious. What do we do with all of this stuff? I mean, you know, in some ways, when you talk about this 20 years ago and the lack of attention that's paid to it, in some ways, maybe it's prudent not to scare the hell out of everybody because there's nothing we can do about it. If an asteroid hits the Earth, it's all done for anyway, correct?
Well, the issue is whether it must hit the Earth, which one surely will, an asteroid or comet at some point in the future. And then the question is when in the future. And at the moment, we don't have enough data to make responsible pronouncements on this matter.
What do we do if something like that does? I mean, is there some way to avoid it?
Yes, there are ways to avoid it. It would be really at the extreme edge, the outer limit of what science could do would be to divert an object with our name on it from its course, but it would certainly be within the realms of the possible. It would require a tremendous international project in order to bring this off.
Do you think that they're neglecting that responsibility to try to find a way to deal with that?
Again, I'm not certain. I mean, I suppose the worrying side of the situation is that if a government had definite evidence that a large object was going to hit the Earth in 20 or 15 or whatever number of years' time, how likely it would be to share that evidence with the public. That was one of the things that I found somewhat unbelievable about the movie Deep Impact. Although the special effects in the movie were highly realistic, and the movie was advised by Eugene Shoemaker, the discoverer of Comet Shoemaker-Levy 9, and,
right,
and was good on its science. I don't think that the movie was realistic at all when the American president stood up and said, well, actually, sorry, folks, everybody's going to die except we're going to save a million people whose numbers will be drawn by a lottery. I don't see the American public just standing by and quietly accepting that. I think there would be chaos. So I can certainly envisage a motive for why government might not reveal such information widely to the public,
mm-hmm,
and yet might take steps to save a few. But I would like to believe that that is not the case, and that again what we're dealing with here is simply a rather late awakening to the fact that the cosmos has played a very, very important role in the history of life on Earth, and that there have been a series of gigantic cataclysms over the last few hundred million years which have brought life very close to total extinction, and that there's no reason to believe that that situation is over. Maybe it's just a late awakening to that.
And,
also, this is where Mars again has something to tell us if we're prepared to listen, which is that a planet which clearly could have been a functioning ecosystem can be completely devastated and destroyed by collisions with these objects, because that is what has happened to Mars. It is a planet that has literally been murdered.
Okay, with this message that we're talking about, what is it that the thrust of your work, what does it push us to? What's on the other side of this? What should we do?
I think what's on the other side of it, first of all, is wakening up to a different type of consciousness of the cosmos. That we have to leave behind the very Earth-centered view that causes us to be hostile right at the beginning to the idea that there might have been intelligent life on Mars without even checking that out. And we have to leave behind the very Earth-centered view that tells us we have no problems, nothing is going to come flying out of the sky and end our civilization, and everything is just going to be fine forever. We have to not be so complacent. But this is part of the responsibility of being grown up. We have to take account of the universe in which we live and be open to its mystery and aware of the dangers that it presents. And that's really what the thrust of this book is all about.
Is there a theology in all of this?
Well, I think there is, yes. I think there is a theology in it because life itself, why you and I are alive and able to have, hopefully, an intelligent conversation about these issues is itself a mystery. Nobody really knows how life began on Earth. It seems to have begun very early. Nobody understands really why consciousness evolves. There are all kinds of theories about this, but nobody really knows. The whole thing's a mystery. Planet is a place where life unfolds, so the destruction of a planet must surely be a victory for evil.
Does this theology provide an answer, a solution to the problem, perhaps?
I think the only solution to the problem is common sense. We should think independently and freely about these challenges that the universe is throwing at us, and we should attempt to respond to the challenges. And that means being willing to check out extraordinary possibilities on a neighboring planet, even if they turn out to be dull as ditch water in the end. And it certainly means looking at the past record of other planets and of our own planet regarding asteroid and cometary collisions, which is a very worrying record.
See, I'm kind of stumped over what NASA could be so fearful of.
Me too.
I mean, I don't understand it.
I'm stumped too. And maybe they're not, you see. I mean, this is the thing. There's been enough peculiar behavior over the issue of the face on Mars. For example, the denial from the very beginning that it was a face, and various sort of cooked books about second photographs being taken which disconfirmed it when in fact they weren't, and so on. Right from the beginning, there's been enough odd behavior on the part of NASA to justify the accusation. But it doesn't mean the accusation is true. It just means it isn't unreasonable to suggest that there may be some kind of cover-up going on, but it doesn't prove there is one. And it doesn't prove that there's anything to hide, and that maybe at the bottom of all of this is simply a very fixed view of scientific truth on the part of NASA and an arrogant conviction that they are correct about this and that everybody else is wrong. It could just be that.
If it turns out to be that, does that leave us in a different place?
No, it doesn't leave us in a different place because we're still
where we are today.
We're still where we are today, and some kind of public policy decision needs to be taken, which the public can have an influence on what our priorities are for the research of the planet Mars. You know, is our top priority to, you know, to get to know every detail of its geology, or do we have, which it seems to be one of NASA's main interests at the moment, or do we have other priorities like finding out once and for all whether these odd things on Cydonia are artificial or not?
Right, right. Okay, hold that. When we come back, we'll get some closing thoughts from you, and very interesting. And the book is called The Mars Mystery, The Secret Connection Between Earth and the Red Planet. Crown Publishers is the publishing company, and it's available in all bookstores. And it's written by Graham Hancock, who is our guest tonight. 1-800-836-2009. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this.
Paranet wants you to know. Did you know that Paranet Information Services was the first comprehensive paranormal and UFO information service of record? In 1986, Paranet was launched as an electronic news and information service dedicated to answering questions and questioning answers. Since Paranet's launch, we've expanded to a truly global organization linking research and investigative groups via our computer network, now on the Internet. This radio program is a mere extension of the vast knowledge base and experience Paranet has gained through thorough and timely reporting on events throughout the globe. Michael Corbin, Paranet's director, brings 10 years' experience to the Paranet Continuum. This program offers something that others can't and don't, an extensive focus on these issues. To learn more about Paranet, you can contact us toll-free at 1-800-836-6381. Or visit our website at www.paranet.org/paranet.
Are you sick and tired of the same old UFO magazines? Paranet has the cure. Continuum. Paranet's quarterly magazine is packed with stories you're not used to seeing in the other magazines. There's a regular series on the need to establish a first contact science, written by a psychologist on the alien abduction phenomenon. You'll find interviews with Paranet's fascinating guests, late-breaking news from the worlds of science, ufology, and the paranormal, intriguing discussions from Paranet's news groups on the Internet, and their sighting reports, book reviews, and much more. A subscription to Continuum is only $18 for 4 quarterly issues. Call now to order Continuum at 1-800-UFO-NET-1. That's 1-800-836-6381. MasterCard and Visa accepted. Continuum. Paranet's cure for the UFO blues. Call 1-800-836-6381 and order Continuum today. Some say the truth is out there. Sometimes we're not so sure. Call in and tell us what you think on the Paranet Continuum. Now, back to your host, Michael Corbin.
Welcoming back my guest, Graham Hancock. We're talking about the Mars mystery. We've got a caller in here real quick. We're about out of time, but let's take a call. We've got Anthony calling in on our affiliate, 1280 Ralph in the Denver area. Go ahead, Anthony. What's your question? Hello? I'm not getting Anthony. Hold on, please.
civilization it was, whether it was the Mayans or the Aztecs. But
excuse me, I'm sorry. You'll have to ask your question again. We couldn't hear it.
I'm relatively new at the subject. I've only listened to your show now for the last couple of weeks. But I don't recall which civilization it was, whether it was the Mayans or the Aztecs. But they used to sacrifice babies to the sun god Ra. Are we supposed to do the same thing?
Neither the Mayans nor the Aztecs made any sacrifice to the sun god Ra, because the sun god Ra was the god of the ancient Egyptians and was not.
So maybe it was the ancient Egyptians. Whichever civilization it was, is this what we're supposed to do?
Egyptians did not perform human sacrifice at all. And the behavior of the Aztecs in this regard was to create a schizophrenic hell world in Mexico. This was abominable, dreadful behavior, amongst the worst actions that human beings ever have committed anywhere on Earth. And certainly, no, we're not supposed to do that.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, thanks for your call. Okay, Graham, we're about out of time. Can we? What is your future plans? I mean, with this book and things in the future with this.
This book's finished. I've put my views out there on this and considered the issue, and that's really it as far as I'm concerned. I felt that this was an important subject which deserved serious consideration, and that's what I've tried to give it. I have another book coming up later this year. I have a TV series on the Learning Channel, 16th and 17th of August, which is Quest for the Lost Civilization, which is going back to my former theme, Fingerprints of the Gods, but looking
right.
more at the spiritual legacy of a lost civilization than simply trying to prove that it exists. And that is also a book called Heaven's Mirror, which will come out at the same time.
Okay, very good. Well, listen, thank you very much for joining us tonight. Talk about your book, The Mars Mystery.
Pleasure. Nice to talk to you, too.
Okay, we'll be in touch. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, that was Graham Hancock, and again, the book is The Mars Mystery, The Secret Connection Between Earth and the Red Planet. Stay tuned for the second hour if you're in Denver. We've got the MUFON people talking about the symposium that occurred this weekend. Very interesting, and I'll have more comments about that later. If you want to reach me, you can do so at 303-863-0484. My email address is mcorbin@dimensional.com, and of course, our website is www.paranetinfo.com. Until next week, I'm Michael Corbin telling you to keep your eyes on the skies. Good night.